50-year-old blood incubus who is trying to kill you, a few cheerleaders aren't that intimidating.
You okay? Lena squeezed my hand. I'm okay.
I could hear Ridley's shoes smacking against the concrete behind us. Link jogged up alongside me.
Man, if this is what I have to look forward to, this year is gonna rock!
I tried to convince myself he was right as we cut across the brown grass, dead lubbers crunching under our feet. September 7th. Stonewalling. There's something about walking into school holding hands with a person you actually love. It's strange. Not bad strange. The best strange. I remembered what made couples hang around attached to each other like cold spaghetti. There were so many ways to be knotted up together. Arms draped around necks, hands crossed in pockets. We couldn't even walk next to each other without our shoulders finding a way to bump, as if our bodies gravitated toward each other on their own. I guess when electric voltage marked each of those tiny connections, you noticed them more than the average guy. Even though I should have been used to it by now, it still felt weird to walk down the halls while everyone stared at Lena. She would always be the most beautiful girl in school, no matter what color her eyes were, and everyone here knew it, too. She was that girl, the one who had her own kind of power, supernatural or not. And there was a look a guy couldn't help but give that girl, no matter what she'd done or how much of a freak she would always be. It was the same look the guys were giving her now.
Calm down, lover boy.
Lena bumped her shoulder against mine. I forgot what this walk was like. After Lena's 16th birthday, I lost more and more of her every day. By the end of the school year, she was so distant I could barely find her in the halls. It was only a few months ago, but now that we were here again, I remembered.
I don't like the way they're looking at you.
What way?
I stopped walking and touched the side of Lena's face below the crescent-shaped birthmark on her cheekbone. A shiver shot through both of us, and I leaned down to find her mouth.
This way.
She pulled back, smiling, and dragged me down the hall.
I get the picture, but I think you're way off. Look.
Emery Watkins and the other guys from the basketball team were staring past us as we walked by his locker. He nodded at me.
I hate to break it to you, Ethan, but they're not looking at me.
I heard Link's voice.
Hey, girls, we shooting hoops this afternoon or what?
He bumped fists with Emery and kept walking. But they weren't looking at him either. Ridley was a step behind the rest of us, letting her long pink nails trail along the locker doors. When she got to Emery's, she let the door close beneath her fingers.
Hey, girls.
The way Ridley rolled out the words, she still sounded like a siren. Emery stammered, and Ridley let her finger trail across his chest as she walked past. In that skirt, she was showing more leg than should have been legal. The entire team turned to watch her go.
Who's your friend?
Emery was talking to Link, but he didn't take his eyes off Ridley. He'd seen her before, at the Stop and Steal when I first met her, and at the winter formal when she trashed the gym, but he was looking for an introduction, up close and personal.
Who wants to know?
Rid blew a bubble, letting it pop. Link looked at her sideways and grabbed Ridley's hand.
Nobody.
The hallway divided in front of them as an ex-siren and a quarter incubus conquered Jackson High. I wondered what Amma would have to say about that.
Sweet baby in a manger.
Heaven help us all.
Are you kidding? I'm supposed to keep my things in this filthy tin coffin? Ridley stared into her locker like she thought something was going to pop out of it.
Rid, you've been to school before, and you had a locker, Lena said patiently.
Ridley flipped her pink and blonde hair.
I must have blocked all that out. Post-traumatic stress.
Lena handed Ridley the combination lock.
You don't have to use it, but you can put your books inside so you don't have to carry them around all day.
Books? Ridley looked disgusted.
Carry?
Lena sighed.
You'll get them today in your classes. And yes, you have to carry them. You should know how this works.
Ridley adjusted her shirt to expose a little more shoulder.
I was a siren the last time I was in school. I didn't actually go to any of my classes, and I certainly didn't carry anything.
Link clapped his hand down on her shoulder.
Come on, we have homeroom together. I'll show you how it's done. Link style.
Yeah?
Ridley sounded skeptical.
How is that any better?
Well, for starters, it doesn't involve any books.
Link seemed more than happy to walk her to class. He wanted to keep an eye on her.
Ridley, wait, you need this!
Lena waved a binder in the air. Ridley slipped her arm through Link's and ignored her.
Relax, cuz, I'll use hot rods.
I slammed the locker shut. Your grandma is an optimist.
You think?
Like everyone else, I watched Link and Rid disappear down the hall.
I give this whole little experiment 3 days, max.
3 days?
You're the optimist. Lena sighed, and we started up the stairs to English. The air conditioning was running full blast, a pathetic mechanical hum echoing through the halls. But the outdated system didn't stand a chance against this heat wave. It was even hotter upstairs in the administration building than it was outside in the parking lot. As we walked into English class, I stopped for a minute under the fluorescent light, the one that had burned out when Lena and I had collided on the way into this room the first day I saw her. I stared up at the cardboard squares in the ceiling.
You know, if you look really close, you can still see the burn mark around the new light. How romantic. The scene of our first disaster.
Lena followed my eyes up to the ceiling.
I think I see it.
I let my eyes linger on the squares speckled with perforated dots. How many times had I sat in class staring up at those dots, trying to stay awake or counting them to pass time? Counting minutes left in a class period, periods left in the day, days into weeks, weeks into months, until I got out of Gatlin. Lena walked by Mrs. English, who was buried in first day of school papers at her desk, and slid into her old seat on the infamous good eye side.
I started to follow her, but I sensed someone behind me. It was that feeling you get when you're in line and the person after you is standing way too close. I turned around, but no one was there.
Lena was already writing in her notebook when I sat down at the desk next to hers. I wondered if she was writing one of her poems. I was about to sneak a look when I heard it.
The voice was faint, and it wasn't Lena's. It was a low whisper coming from over my shoulder. I turned around. The seat behind me was empty.
Did you say something, Elle?
Lena looked up from the notebook, surprised.
What? Were you kelting? I thought I heard something.
She shook her head.
No. Are you okay?
I nodded, opening my binder.
I heard the voice again.
This time I recognized the words. The letters appeared on the page in my handwriting. I'm waiting. I slammed it shut, clenching my hands to stop them from shaking. Lena looked up at me.
Are you sure you're okay?
I'm fine. I didn't look up once for the rest of the period. I didn't look up while I failed the quiz on the crucible, not when Lena participated, straight-faced, in a class discussion about the Salem witch trials, or when Emily Asher made a less-than-clever comparison between dear departed Macon Ravenwood and the possessed townsfolk in the play, and a ceiling tile suddenly came loose and smacked her on the head. I didn't look up again until the bell rang. Mrs. English was staring at me, her expression so unnerving and blank that for a second I thought both her eyes could have been glass. I tried to tell myself that it was the first day of school, which could make anyone crazy, that she'd probably just had a bad cup of coffee. But this was Gatlin, so there was a pretty good chance I was wrong. Once English was over, Lena and I didn't have any other classes together until after lunch. I was in trig and Lena was in calculus. Link, and now Ridley, had been bumped down to consumer math, the class the teachers enrolled you in when they finally admitted you weren't going to make it past Algebra 2. Everyone called it burger math because all you learned was how to make change. Link's whole schedule read like the teachers had decided he was going to be working at the BP station with Ed after graduation. His schedule was basically one big study hall. I had bio, he had rocks for jocks. I had world history, he had CSS, cultures of southern states, or checking out Savannah Snow, as he called it. Compared to Link, I looked like a rocket scientist. He didn't seem to care, or if he did, there were too many girls following him around for him to notice. To be honest, it didn't matter, because all I wanted to do was get lost in the familiar blur of the first day of school so I could forget about the crazy message in my binder. I guess there's nothing like a crappy summer filled with near-death experiences to make the first day of school seem great in comparison. Until I got to the cafeteria, where it was Sloppy Joe Day. Of course it was. Nothing said first day of school like Sloppy Joe's. I found Lena and Ridley easily enough. They were sitting alone at one of the orange lunch tables, with a steady stream of guys circling like vultures. Everyone had heard about Ridley by now, and all the guys wanted to check her out. "Where's Link?" Ridley tilted her head toward the back of the lunchroom, where Link was moving from table to table like he was the MVP at the state championship or something. I noticed her tray full of chocolate pudding, red jello cubes, and slices of dry-looking angel food cake. "Hungry, Rid?" "What can I say, boyfriend? Girl's got a sweet tooth." She picked up a bowl of pudding and dug in. "Don't tease her. She's having a bad day," Lena said.
"Really? That's a shocker."
I bit into my first deflated Sloppy Joe. "What happened?" Lena glanced back at one of the tables.
"That happened."
Link had 1 foot up on the plastic bench, and he was leaning over the table, talking to the cheer squad, his attention focused on one cheer captain in particular.
"Oh, that's nothing. Just Link being Link. You don't have anything to worry about, Rid."
"Like I'm worried," she snapped. "I could care less what he does."
But I looked down at her tray, and 4 of the pudding bowls were already empty.
"I'm not coming back tomorrow anyway. This whole school thing is moronic.
You move around from room to room like herds or flocks or schools? I couldn't resist. That's what I'm talking about. Ridley rolled her eyes, annoyed that I couldn't keep up.
I was talking about fish. A group of fish is called a school. If you went to school, you'd know that.
I ducked to avoid her spoon. That isn't the point. Lena shot me a warning look.
The point is you're sort of a solo act, I said, trying to sound sympathetic.
Ridley went back to her pudding with a serious level of sugar dedication I respected. She didn't take her eyes off Link.
Actually, trying to make someone like you is totally demeaning. It's pathetic. It's
mortal?
Exactly.
She shuddered, moving on to the jello. A few minutes later, Link worked his way over to our table. He dropped down next to Ridley, and the side of the table where Lena and I were sitting lifted right off the ground. At 6'2", I was one of the tallest guys at Jackson, but I only had an inch or so on Link now.
Hey, man, take it easy.
Link eased up a little, and our side of the table smacked down against the linoleum. People were staring.
Sorry, I keep forgetting. I'm transitioning. Mr. Ravenwood said this would be a rough time when you're the new kid on the block.
Lena kicked me under the table, trying not to laugh. Ridley was less subtle.
I think all this sugar is making me sick. Oh, wait, did I say sugar? I meant sap.
She looked at Link,
and when I said sap, I meant you.
Link smiled. This was the Ridley he liked best.
Your uncle said no one would understand.
Yeah, I bet it's really tough being the Hulk. I was kidding, but I wasn't far off.
Dude, it's no joke. I can't sit down for more than 5 minutes or people start throwing their food at me like they expect me to eat it.
Well, you did have a reputation for being a human garbage disposal.
I could still eat if I wanted to.
He looked disgusted.
But food doesn't taste like anything. It's like chewing on cardboard. I'm on the Making Ravenwood diet. You know, snacking on a few dreams here and there.
Whose dreams? If Link was feeding off my dreams, I was going to kick his ass. They were confusing enough without him.
No way. Your head's too full of crazy for me. But you wouldn't believe what Savannah dreams about. Let's just say she's not thinking about the state finals.
No one wanted to hear the details, especially not Ridley, who was stabbing at her jello. I tried to spare her.
That's a visual I can live without. Thanks. It's cool, but you'll never guess what I saw.
If he said Savannah in her underwear, he was a dead man. Lena was thinking the same thing.
Link, I don't think...
Dolls.
What?
It wasn't the answer Lena was expecting.
Barbies. But not the ones girls had in elementary school. These puppies are all dressed up. She's got a bride, Miss America, Snow White, and they're in this big glass case.
I knew she reminded me of a Barbie.
Ridley stabbed another cube. Link slid closer to her.
You still ignoring me?
You're not worth the time it takes to ignore.
Ridley stared through the jiggling red cube.
I don't think Kitchen makes this. What's it called again?
Jell-O Surprise, Link grinned.
What's the surprise?
Ridley examined the red gelatin more closely.
What they put in it.
He flicked the cube with his finger, and she pulled it away.
Which is?
Ground up hooves, hides, and bones. Surprise!
Ridley looked at him, shrugged, and put the spoon in her mouth. She wasn't going to give him an inch. Not as long as he was creeping around Savannah Snow's bedroom at night and flirting with her all day. Link looked over at me.
So, you want to shoot some hoops after school?
No. I shoved the rest of the sloppy joe into my mouth.
I can't believe you're eating that. You hate those things.
I know, but they're pretty good today. A Jackson first. When Amma's cooking was off and the cafeteria's was on, maybe it really was the end of days.
You know, you can play basketball if you want to.
Lena was offering me something, the same thing Link was, a chance to make peace with my former friends, to be less of an outcast, if that was possible. But it was too late. Your friends were supposed to stand by you, and now I knew who my friends really were, and who they weren't.
I don't want to.
Come on, it's cool. All that crazy stuff with the guys is history.
Link believed what he was saying, but history was hard to forget when it included tormenting your girlfriend all year.
Yeah, people around here aren't into history.
Even Link caught my sarcasm.
Well, I'm gonna hit the court.
He didn't look at me.
I might even go back on the team. I mean, it's not like I was really off.
Not like you. That's the part he didn't say.
It's really hot in here.
Sweat was dripping down my back. So many people crammed into one room.
You okay?
No. Yeah. I just need to get some air.
I stood up to go, but the door looked like it was a mile away. This school had a way of making you feel small as it was, maybe even smaller. I guess some things never change. Turns out Ridley wasn't interested in studying the cultures of the southern states any more than she was interested in Link studying Savannah Snow, and 5 minutes into the period, she convinced him they should switch to world history, which wouldn't have surprised me, except switching classes usually involved taking your schedule to Miss Hester, then lying and begging, and if you were really stuck, crying. So when Link and Ridley showed up in world history and he told me that his schedule had miraculously changed, I was more than suspicious. What do you mean your schedule changed? Link dropped his notebook onto the desk next to me and shrugged.
I don't know. 1 minute Savannah sits down next to me, then Ridley comes in and sits on the other side, and the next thing I know, world history's printed on my schedule. Rids, too. She shows the teacher, and we get kicked right out of class.
How did you manage that? I asked as Ridley settled into her seat.
Manage what?
She looked at me innocently, clicking and unclicking her creepy scorpion belt buckle. Lena wasn't letting her off that easy.
You know what he's talking about. Did you take a book from Uncle Macon's study? Are you actually accusing me of reading?
Lena lowered her voice.
Were you trying to cast? It's not safe, Ridley.
You mean not safe for me, because I'm a stupid mortal.
Casting is dangerous for mortals, unless you've had years of training like Marion, which you haven't.
Lena wasn't trying to rub it in, but every time she said the word mortal, Ridley cringed. It was like pouring gasoline on a fire. Maybe it was too hard to hear from a caster. I jumped in.
Lena's right. Who knows what could happen if something went wrong?
Ridley didn't say a word, and for a second it seemed like I had single-handedly put out the flames. But as she turned to face me, her blue eyes blazing as bright as her yellow ones ever had, I realized how wrong I was.
I don't remember anyone complaining when you and your little British Marion in training were casting at the Great Barrier.
Lena blushed and looked away. Ridley was right. Liv and I had cast at the Great Barrier. It was how we freed Macon from the Arclight, and why Liv would never be a keeper. and it was a painful reminder of a time when Lena and I were as far away from each other as two people could be. I didn't say anything. Instead, I stumbled over my thoughts, crashing and burning in the silence, while Mr. Littleton tried to convince us how fascinating world history was going to be. He failed. I tried to come up with something to say that would rescue me from the awkwardness of the next 10 seconds. I failed. Because even though Liv wasn't at Jackson, and she spent all her days in the tunnels with Macon, she was still the elephant in the room, the thing Lena and I didn't talk about. I had only seen Liv once since the night of the 17th moon, and I missed her. Not like I could tell anyone that. I missed her crazy British accent, and the way she mispronounced Carolina so it sounded like Caroliner. I missed her selenometer that looked like a giant plastic watch from 30 years ago, and the way she was always writing in her tiny red notebook. I missed the way we joked around and the way she made fun of me. I missed my friend. The sad part was, she probably would have understood. I just couldn't tell her. September 7th. Off Route 9. After school, Link stayed to play basketball with the guys. Ridley wouldn't leave without him as long as the cheer squad was in the gym, even though she wouldn't admit it. I stood inside the gym doors and watched Link dribble down the court without breaking a sweat. I watched him sink the ball from the paint, from the top of the key, from the three-point mark, from center court. I watched the other guys stand there with their mouths hanging open. I watched Coach sit back on the bleachers with his whistle still stuck in his mouth. I enjoyed every minute, almost as much as Link. "You miss it?" Lena was watching me from the doorway. I shook my head. "No way. I don't want to hang out with the rest of those guys." I smiled, and for once, no one's looking at us. I held out my hand, and she took it. Hers was warm and soft. "Let's get out of here," she said. Boo Radley was sitting at the corner of the lot by the stop sign, panting like there wasn't enough air in the world to cool him off. I wondered if Macon was still watching us and everyone else through the caster dog's eyes. We pulled up next to him and opened the door. Boo didn't even hesitate. We drove up Route 9, where Gatlin's houses disappeared and turned into rows of fields. This time of year, those fields were usually a mix of green and brown, corn and tobacco. But this year, there was nothing but black and yellow as far as the eye could see, dead plants and lubbers eating their way right onto the road. You could hear them crunching beneath the tires. It looked wrong. It was the other thing we didn't like to talk about. The apocalypse that had settled over Gatlin in place of fall. Link's mom was convinced that the heat wave and the bugs were the results of the wrath of God. But I knew she was wrong. At the Great Barrier, Abraham Ravenwood had promised that Lena's choice would affect both the caster and mortal worlds. He wasn't kidding. Lena stared out the window, her eyes locked on the ravaged fields. There was nothing I could say that would make her feel any better or less responsible. The only thing I could do was try to distract her. Today was crazy, even for the first day of school. "I feel bad for Ridley." Lena pushed her hair up off her shoulders, twisting it into a messy knot. "She's not herself." "Which means she's not an evil siren secretly working for Seraphine. How sorry should I be?" "She seems so lost." "My prediction? She's gonna mess with Link's head again." Lena bit her lip. "Yeah, well, Ridley still thinks she's a siren. Messing with people is part of the job description.
I bet she'll bring down the whole pyramid before she's done.
Then she'll get expelled, Lena said. I pulled off at the crossroads, turning off Route 9 and onto the road to Ravenwood. Not before she burns Jackson to the ground. The oak trees grew and arched over the road leading up to Lena's house, bringing the temperature down a degree or two. The breeze from the open window blew through Lena's dark curls. I don't think Ridley can stand being in the house. My whole family is acting crazy. Aunt Dell doesn't know if she's coming or going.
That's nothing new.
Yesterday, Aunt Dell thought Ryan was Reese.
And Reese? I asked.
Reese's powers have been all over the place. She's always complaining about it. Sometimes she looks at me and freaks out, and I don't know if it's because of something she's read in my face or because she can't read anything at all. Reese was already cranky enough under normal circumstances.
At least you have your uncle.
Sort of. Every day Uncle Macon disappears into the tunnels, and he won't say what he's doing down there, like he doesn't want me to know.
How is that weird? He and Amma never want us to know anything.
I tried to act like I wasn't worried even as the tires rolled over more lubbers. He's been back for weeks now, and I still don't know what kind of caster he is. I mean, except light. He won't talk about it, not to anyone.
Not even me. That's what she was saying. Maybe he doesn't know himself.
Forget it.
She looked out the window and I took her hand. We were both so hot I could barely feel the burn of her touch.
Can you talk to your grandma?
Grandma spends half her time in Barbados trying to figure things out.
Lena didn't say what she really meant. Her family was trying to find a way to restore the order, banish the heat and the lubbers and whatever we had to look forward to in the mortal world.
Ravenwood has more binding spells on it than a caster prison. It's so claustrophobic that I feel as bound as the house. It gives new meaning to being grounded.
Lena shook her head. I keep hoping Ridley doesn't feel it, now that she's immortal.
I didn't say anything, but I was pretty sure Ridley felt it, because I did. As we got closer to the great house, I could feel the magic, buzzing like it was a live power line, the weight of a thick fog that had nothing to do with the weather. The atmosphere of caster magic, dark and light. I had been able to sense it ever since we came back from the Great Barrier, and when I pulled up to the crooked iron gates that marked the boundaries of Ravenwood, the air around us crackled, almost as charged as an electrical storm. The gates themselves weren't the real barrier. Ravenwood's gardens, so overgrown while Macon was gone, were the one place in the whole county that was a refuge from the heat and the bugs. Maybe it was a testament to the power of Lena's family, but as we passed through the gates, I could feel the energy from outside pulling one way while Ravenwood pulled the other. Ravenwood was standing its ground. You could tell by the way the endless brown outside its grounds gave way to green within, the way the gardens remained uneaten, untouched. Macon's flower beds were blooming and brilliant, his trees trimmed and orderly, the broad green lawns clipped close and clean, stretching down from the great house to the Santee River. Even the paths were lined with new gravel. But the outside world was pushing against the gates, and the casts and bindings keeping Ravenwood safe, like waves crashing on the rocks, battering the same reef over and over, eroding a few grains of sand at a time. Eventually, waves always get their way.
If the order of things was really broken, Ravenwood couldn't remain the only outpost of a lost world for long. I pulled the hearse up to the house, and before I could say a word, we were out of the car and into the damp air outside. Lena threw herself onto the cool grass, and I dropped down next to her. I'd been waiting for this moment all day, and I felt sorry for Amma and my dad and the rest of Gatlin, trapped in town beneath the burning blue sky. I didn't know how much more of this I could take.
I know. Crap. I didn't mean. I know. You're not blaming me. It's all right.
She moved closer, reaching for my face with her hand. I braced myself. My heart didn't just race anymore when we touched. Now I could feel the energy draining from my body, as if it was being sucked out. But she hesitated and let her hand drop.
This is my fault. I know you don't feel like you can say it, but I can.
L. She rolled onto her back and stared at the sky.
Late at night, I lie in bed, close my eyes, and try to break through it. Try to pull the clouds in and push the heat away. You don't know how hard it is, how much it takes from all of us to keep Ravenwood like this.
She picked a blade of green grass.
Uncle Macon says he doesn't know what will happen next. Grandma says it's impossible to know, because this has never happened before.
Do you believe them? When it came to Lena, Macon was about as forthcoming as Amma was with me. If there was something she could have done differently, he'd be the last person to tell her.
I don't know, but this is bigger than Gatlin. Whatever I did, it's affecting other casters outside of my family. Everyone's powers are misfiring like mine.
Your powers have never been predictable. Lena looked away.
Spontaneous combustion is a little more than unpredictable.
I knew she was right. Gatlin was teetering dangerously on the edge of an invisible cliff, and we had no idea what was at the bottom. But I couldn't say that to her, not when she was the one responsible for putting it there. We'll figure out what's going on.
I'm not so sure.
She held one hand up to the sky, and I thought back to the first time I followed her into the garden at Greenbriar. I had watched her tracing clouds with her fingertips, making shapes in the sky. I hadn't known then what I was getting myself into, but it wouldn't have mattered. Everything had changed, even the sky. This time there wasn't a cloud to trace. There was nothing but the threatening blue heat. Lena raised her other hand and looked over at me.
This isn't going to stop. Things are going to keep getting worse. We have to be ready.
She pulled on the sky with her hands absent-mindedly, twisting the air slowly, like taffy between her fingers.
Seraphine and Abraham aren't going to just walk away.
I'm ready. She looped her finger through the air.
Ethan, I want you to know that I'm not afraid of anything anymore.
I'm not either. Not as long as we're together.
That's the thing. If something happens, it will be because of me, and I'll have to be the one to fix it. Do you understand what I'm saying?
She didn't take her eyes off her fingers.
No, I don't. You don't, or you don't want to?
I can't.
You remember when Amma used to tell you not to pick a hole in the sky or the universe would fall through?
I smiled. C-O-N-C-O-M-I-T-A-N-T. 11 down, as in,
You go ahead and pull on that thread and watch the whole world unravel like a sweater, Ethan Waite.
Lena should have been laughing, but she wasn't.
I pulled on the thread when I used the Book of Moons, because of me.
I thought about it all the time. She wasn't the only one of us who had pulled on the one piece of yarn that tied up all of Gatlin County, above and below the surface.
I claimed myself. You had to. You should be proud of that.
I am. She hesitated. But I watched her carefully.
But I'm going to have to pay a price, and I'm ready to.
I closed my eyes.
Don't talk like that.
I'm being realistic. You're waiting for something bad to happen. I didn't want to think about it. Lena played with the charms on her necklace.
It's not really a question of if, but when.
I'm waiting. That's what the notebook said.
What notebook?
I didn't want her to know, but now I couldn't stop it. And I couldn't pretend we could go back to the way things were. The wrongness of everything came crashing down on me. The summer, Macon's death, Lena acting like a stranger, running away with John Breed and away from me. And then the rest of it, the part that happened before I met Lena. My mom not coming home, her shoes sitting where she'd left them, her towel still damp from the morning. Her side of the bed not slept in, the smell of her hair still on her pillow, the mail that still came addressed in her name, the suddenness of it all, and the permanence, the lonely reality of the truth, that the most important person in your life suddenly ceased to exist, which on a bad day meant maybe she had never existed at all, and on a good day, there was the other fear, that even if you were 100% sure she had been there, maybe you were the only one who cared or remembered. How can a pillow smell like a person who isn't even on the same planet as you anymore? And what do you do when one day the pillow just smells like any old pillow, a strange pillow? How can you bring yourself to put away those shoes? But I had, and I had seen my mother's shear at Bonaventure Cemetery. For the first time in my life, I believed something actually happened when you died. My mom wasn't alone in the dirt in his garden of perpetual peace, the way I'd always been afraid she was. I was letting her go. At least, I was close.
Ethan, what's going on?
I wished I knew. I'm not going to let anything happen to you. No one will. I said the words even though I knew I wasn't capable of protecting her. I said them because I felt like my heart was going to rip itself to shreds all over again.
I know, she lied.
Lena didn't say anything else. But she knew what I was feeling. She pulled down the sky with her hands as hard as she could, like she wanted to rip it away from the sun. I heard a loud, cracking sound. I didn't know where it came from, and I didn't know how long it would last, but the blue sky broke open, and though there wasn't a cloud in sight, we let the rain fall on our faces. I felt the wet grass and the raindrops in my eyes. They felt real. I felt my sweaty clothes dampening instead of drying. I pulled her close and held her face in my hands. Then I kissed her until I wasn't the only one who was breathless, and the ground beneath us dried, and the sky was harsh and blue again. Dinner was Amma's prize-winning chicken pot pie. My portion alone was the size of my plate, or maybe home plate. I punctured the biscuit crust with my fork, letting the steam escape. I could smell the good sherry, her secret ingredient. Every pot pie in our county had a secret ingredient. Sour cream, soy sauce, cayenne pepper, even Parmesan cheese straight out of the shaker. Secrets and pie crust went hand in hand around here. Slap a pie crust up top, and all the folks in town will kill themselves trying to figure out what's hiding underneath.
Ah, that smell still makes me feel about 8 years old.
My dad smiled at Amma, who ignored both the comment and his suspiciously good mood. Now that the semester had started up again at the university, and he was sitting there in his collared teaching shirt, he looked downright normal. You could almost forget the year he spent sleeping all day, holed up in his office all night, writing a book that amounted to nothing more than hundreds of pages of scribble. Barely speaking or eating until he started the steep, slow climb back to sanity. Or maybe it was the smell of the pies going to work on me, too. I dug deep.
You have a good first day of school, Ethan?
My dad asked, his mouth full. I examined the pie on my fork.
Good enough.
Everything was chopped up real small underneath the dough. You couldn't tell diced chicken from diced vegetables in the tiny chaos of mashed up pie guts. Crap. When Amma had her cleaver out, it was never a good sign. This pot pie was evidence of some kind of furious afternoon I didn't want to imagine. I felt sorry for her scarred cutting board. I looked over at her empty plate and knew she wasn't about to sit down and make small talk tonight, or explain why not. I swallowed.
How about you, Amma?
She was standing at the kitchen counter tossing a salad so hard I thought she was going to shatter our cracked glass bowl.
Good enough.
My dad calmly raised his glass of milk.
Well, my day was unbelievable. I woke up with an incredible idea, out of the blue. Must have come to me last night. During my office hours, I wrote up a proposal. I'm going to start a new book.
Yeah? That's great. I picked up the salad bowl, concentrating on an oily-looking wedge of tomato.
It's about the Civil War. I might even find a way to use some of your mom's old research. I have to talk to Marion about it.
What's the book called, Dad?
That's the part that hit me out of nowhere. I woke up with the words in my head. The 18th Moon.
What do you think? The bowl slipped out of my hands, hitting the table and shattering on the floor. Torn up leaves mixed with jagged pieces of broken glass sparkling across my sneakers and the floorboards.
Ethan, wait!
Before I could say another word, Amma was there, scooping up the soggy, slippery, dangerous mess. Like always. As I got down on my own hands and knees, I could hear her hissing at me under her breath.
Not another word.
She might as well have slapped an old pie crust right across my mouth.
What do you think it means, Elle?
I lay in bed, paralyzed, my face hidden in the pillow. Amma had shut herself up in her room after dinner, which I was pretty sure meant she didn't know what was going on with my dad either.
I don't know.
Lena's kelting came to me as clearly as if she was sitting next to me on the bed, as usual. And as usual, I wished she really was.
How would he come up with that? Did we say something about the songs in front of him? Have we messed something up?
Something else. That was the part I didn't say, and tried not to think. The answer came quickly.
No, Ethan, we never said anything. So if he's talking about the 18th moon,
The truth hit us at the same time.
It's because someone wants him to.
It made sense. Dark Casters had already killed my mom. My dad, just getting back on his feet, was an easy mark. And he had been targeted once already, the night of Lena's 16th moon. There was no other explanation. My mother was gone, but she had found a way to guide me by sending the shadowing songs, 16 moons and 17 moons, which stayed stuck in my head until I finally started to listen. But this message wasn't coming from my mom.
El, you think it's some kind of warning from Abraham?
Maybe, or my wonderful mother. Seraphine. Lena almost never said her name, if she could avoid it. I didn't blame her.
It has to be one of them, right?
Lena didn't answer, and I lay there in my bed in the dark silence, hoping it was one of the two, one of the devils we knew, from somewhere in the known Castor world, because the devils we didn't know were too terrifying to think about, and the worlds we didn't know, even worse.
Are you still there, Ethan?
I'm here.
Will you read me something?
I smiled to myself and reached under my bed, pulling out the first book I found, Robert Frost, one of Lena's favorites. I opened to a random page.
We make ourselves a place apart, behind light words that tease and flout, but oh, the agitated heart, till someone really find us out.
I didn't stop reading. I felt the reassuring weight of Lena's consciousness leaning against mine, as real as if her head was leaning against my shoulder. I wanted to keep her there as long as I could. She made me feel less alone. Every line felt like it was written about her, at least to me. As Lena drifted off, I listened to the hum of the crickets until I realized it wasn't the crickets at all. It was the lubbers. The plague, or whatever Mrs. Lincoln wanted to call it. The longer I listened, the more it sounded like a million buzzsaws in the distance, destroying my town and everything around it. Then the lubbers faded into something else, the low chords of a song I would recognize anywhere. I'd been hearing the songs since before I met Lena. 16 moons had led me to her, the song only I could hear. I couldn't escape them any more than Lena could run from her destiny or I could hide from mine. They were warnings from my mom, the person I trusted most in any world. I tried to make sense of the words, the way I always did. The world beyond the years ruled out the mortal world, but what was coming from this other world? The 18th moon or the one unchosen? And who could that be? The only person it ruled out was Lena. She'd made her choice, which meant there was another choice to be made by someone who had yet to make one. But the last line was the one that made me sick. A broken day? That pretty much covered every day now. How could things possibly get more broken than this? I wished that I had more than a song, and that my mom was here to tell me what it meant. More than anything, I wished I knew how to fix everything we had broken.
September 12th. Glass houses and stones.
A whole catfish stared at me with glassy eyes, its tail giving a final flop. On one side of the fish was a massive plate piled with slabs of fatty, uncooked bacon. A platter of raw shrimp, translucent and gray, sat on the other side, next to a bowl of dry instant grits. A plate of runny eggs with bleeding yolks in thick white sauce was the best of the worst. It was weird, even for Ravenwood, where I sat across from Lena in the formal dining room. Half the food looked like it was ready to get up and run or swim its way off the table. And there wasn't one thing on the table that anyone in Gatlin would ever eat for breakfast, especially not me. I looked back at my empty plate where chocolate milk had appeared in a tall crystal glass. Sitting next to the runny eggs, the milk wasn't appealing. Lena made a face. "Kitchen? Seriously? Again?" I heard an indignant clanging from the other room. Lena had irritated Ravenwood's mysterious cook, who I'd still never seen. Lena shrugged, looking at me. "I told you, everything is out of whack around here. It gets worse every day. Come on, we can grab a sticky bun at the Stop and Steal." I'd lost my appetite around the time I saw the uncooked bacon.
"Kitchen's doing her best. Life is hard enough lately, I'm afraid. Last night, Delphine was pounding on my door in the middle of the night, insisting the British were coming."
A familiar voice, the soft shuffling of slippers, a scraping chair. And there he was, Macon Ravenwood, holding an armful of rolled newspapers, lifting a teacup that was suddenly full of what probably was supposed to be tea, but looked like some kind of soupy green muck. Boo stalked in after him and curled up at his master's feet. Lena sighed. "Ryan's crying. She won't admit it, but she's afraid she'll never completely come into her powers now. Uncle Barkley can't shift anymore. Aunt Dell says he can't even turn a frown into a smile." Macon raised his cup, nodding in my direction.
"That can all wait until after breakfast. How do you rate the morning sun, Mr. Waite?"
"Excuse me, sir?" It sounded like a trick question.
"Robbie Williams, quite the songwriter, don't you think? And quite a relevant question as of late."
He glanced down at his tea before taking a sip and put the cup down.
"My way of saying good morning, I suppose."
"Morning, sir." I tried not to stare. He was wearing a black satin robe. At least, I thought it was a robe. I'd never seen a robe with a handkerchief sticking out of the chest pocket. It didn't look anything like my dad's ratty checkered bathrobe. Macon caught me staring.
"I believe the term you're searching for is smoking jacket. I find, now that I have whole days of sunshine ahead of me, I've discovered there is more to life than formal haberdashery."
"Huh?" "Uncle M likes to lounge around in his pajamas. That's what he means." Lena gave him a kiss on the cheek. "We have to get going or we'll miss out on the sticky buns. Be nice and I'll bring you one." He sighed.
"Hunger is such an incredible inconvenience."
Lena picked up her backpack. "I'll take that as a yes." Macon ignored her, smoothing open the first of his newspapers.
"Earthquakes in Paraguay."
He snapped open the next, which appeared to be written in French.
"The Seine is drying up."
Another.
"The polar ice cap is melting at 10 times the predicted rate, if one is to believe the Helsinki Press."
A fourth paper.
"And the entire southeastern coast of the United States appears to be afflicted by a curious plague of pestilence."
Lena closed his newspaper, revealing a plate of white bread sitting directly in front of him. "Eat. The world will still be on the brink of disaster when you finish your breakfast, even in your smoking jacket." The darkness in Macon's expression lifted, the green eyes of an incubus turned light caster blazing a bit lighter at her touch. Lena gave him a smile, the one she saved only for him. The smile that said,